Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. We have been hearing a lot about Senator Elizabeth Warren's Medicare for All plan, and on Friday, she finally unveiled how she would pay for it. Higher taxes on billionaires and big corporations, which she says will generate trillions of dollars in revenue. It's an ambitious endeavor, so ambitious that Saturday Night Live couldn't resist making a joke out of it.
When the numbers are this big, they're just pretend. there ain't no Scrooge McDuck vault. You ready to get red-pilled? Money doesn't exist.
So now that we've seen the numbers, do they help or hurt Warren's case? Let's first turn to WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Bricks. Anthony, welcome back.
Hi there. Nice to be here.
And Anthony, just quickly join me. I'm going to ask the listeners to call in as well. Do you think Medicare for All is a good idea? What about your current health insurance? Do you want to keep it? Are you worried that Medicare for All might take away what you've got and what you like? Or maybe you prefer Medicare for All who want it. We want you to join the conversation. Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. All right, Anthony, can you help us break this down? How does Elizabeth Warren say this is going to work?
Right. So she says she's going to raise $20 trillion over 10 years, and she would get there by imposing higher taxes on the very wealthy, basically doubling down on her billionaires' tax. She would hit Wall Street by taxing financial transactions. Corporations would face higher taxes. She'd also require employers who are currently paying for health care right now for their employees to essentially redirect that money to the federal government. So that raises a lot of money. She would also try to reduce the price of health care by paying doctors, hospitals, and drug companies less than they're getting now. And a lot of money would also come from savings, in particular from the high overhead costs of the current system. That would be wiped away. And of course, she does all this without raising taxes on the middle class.
So you're out there. What do you think the reception's been? How would you characterize it?
Well, I mean, it's interesting because even before this came out, I think a lot of folks are in line. I mean, I say folks, Democrats out there on the campaign, they get what Warren is trying to do, and healthcare comes up a lot, and I think people are responsive to that. But, you know, our own polling shows that while there's a lot of support for Medicare for All, more people favor fixing the current system and adding a public option. So I think she's taking a bit of a political risk with this, to say the least. And, you know, the reaction has been pretty swift from both sides. And I think this is going to be a big theme in the coming debate. We're going to hear a lot about this. And she's going to be, I think, put on the defensive on this in a lot of ways.
It also sounds, Anthony, like it's kind of raising an electability question again. You know, the size and the scope of this proposal does raise concerns that in a general election, when more than just Democrats will be voting, that she could be vulnerable. What is your take on that?
Well, I mean, I think this just gets down to the fundamental issue that Democrats are wrestling with right now. And, you know, we've got a year to go to the general election to get this, the Democrats do, to get this question right. But, I mean, basically, do you go hard left? Do you embrace a progressive agenda like Bernie Sanders and like Elizabeth Warren to really get that base riled up and out to the polls? Or do you go more toward the middle, Joe Biden's approach, or even Pete Buttigieg? You know, we saw some very interesting polling from the New York Times this week that looked at those key swing states that helped elect President Trump in 2016. And according to the New York Times, to these polls, folks, are much more comfortable with more moderate positions. And if you read into those polls, Democrats might be scratching their heads and saying, you know, is this really the way to go? But, you know, this is a debate that's really going to play out. And speaking of that, you know, when Elizabeth Warren has answered questions along these lines, especially on health care, especially her support for Medicare for All, this is what she said. Here's a bit of what she said last week in New Hampshire while she was campaigning, talking about how she, if she wins the nomination, will bring this fight right to the Republicans.
We will be running in a general election
against the Republicans who have already taken away millions of people's health care. So this is going to be a fight, you're absolutely right, in 2020, between the people who think health care should be reserved for those who are rich and the rest of us who think health care should be there for every American. And I'm ready to take that fight on.
So, Tiziana, the point there is Democrats like Warren are saying, look, if the Republicans really want to engage us in a debate about health care, whether it's Medicare for all or public option or whatever it is, we're ready for that because the Republicans have not delivered anything in the last 3 years on health care, on improving health care.
OK, Anthony, stay with us. I want to bring two other voices into the conversation who will help us look at this from a health care policy perspective. I also want to bring listeners into the conversation. So call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining us on the line is Jonathan Gruber, a professor of economics at MIT and a key architect of Romney Care and the National Affordable Care Act. Welcome back, Jonathan.
Good to be here.
Also on the line is John Kingsdale, professor at Boston University School of Public Health and founding executive director of the Commonwealth Health Insurance Connector Authority. Welcome back to you too, John.
Thank you, Tiziana, but nice to be here.
Yeah. So, John and Jonathan, what do you make of Warren's plan to finance Medicare for All? Do you find it to be a realistic financing plan? Jonathan?
I think it is about as realistic as you could get. I think there's, you know, any plan like this is going to make a number of assumptions. And I think she makes, you know, she starts with the most expensive estimate out there, which is from the Urban Institute. And then she makes serious assumptions, which may or may not be realistic. You quibble on them. But the bottom line is, I think this is the most credible plan out there for paying for it. But we haven't gotten into politics. But if you just ask about the economics, I think she did a fine job laying out a sensible plan to pay for it.
John Kingsdale, do you agree?
Well, in a sense. I mean, she's actually constructed a spreadsheet that starts with the right numbers and has a bunch of line items that she subtracts as expenditures she's going to save and taxes she's going to raise, and gets to, you know, by adding those up to $20.6 trillion over 10 years. Not many of those assumptions, however, I don't think are very realistic. For example, there's a couple of trillion dollars of savings by going to payment reform, like bundled payment, a bunch of acronyms that most of your listeners wouldn't even care to learn about. But they've been in place for 5 or 6, 7 years under the ACA. They haven't produced much savings, if any. The Congressional Budget Office, the scorekeeper, gives virtually no credit to them. So, you know, she's put the line items down. I just don't think they're all that credible. And the biggest one, of course, is freezing taxes on freezing premium contribution from employers. And that raises huge issues in the context in which she proposes it.
So let's take a call here. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join the conversation. Sue from Southborough, pull up a chair. What's on your mind?
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've been on Medicare for a while, and I have a supplement plan to pay what Medicare doesn't, and it doesn't cover everything I have to do. But the thing that scares me about Medicare for All is that I am totally embarrassed at the low rates that Medicare pays doctors, and I'm terrified if a Medicare for All plan comes in that doctors will just give up being doctors because they're paid so little.
Thanks for that, Sue. And John Kingsdale, you've expressed, I think, some concern of the impact, the economic impact of changing to this model. I think Elizabeth Warren is proposing that essentially Medicare for All would pay 110% of what Medicare currently pays out to doctors and providers. Do you share Sue's concern?
Not exactly, although there's a related concern I think she's put her finger on. And you know, Medicare for All would be a monopoly buyer. I mean, doctors would, by definition, have no choice, frankly, to accept whatever Medicare fees were paid them, which is one reason that the medical industrial complex, which is 18% of our economy, is going to resist this plan like crazy. But if we got there, and there are a lot of good things if we could get there, one of the problems is it would increase the use of services significantly. There's irrefutable evidence that if you eliminate cost sharing by patients, the demand for services will go way up. So even if all the doctors and hospitals stay in the system, and I think they'd have no choice, unless there's some kind of black market way to get around that for patients who can pay a lot, you won't have enough doctors and hospitals. You'll have a lot of queues. So I think one way or another, there'll be some waiting.
Jonathan Gruber, was there any of that present as Romney Care was implemented or as we saw the Affordable Care Act implemented?
Yeah, there was not. And I simply don't agree that paying doctors 110% of Medicare is going to lead to massive increases in waiting times or other things. Look, providers for medical care are generally overpaid in America. I think that we can do that. I think there's no doubt it will lead to dislocation. I mean, we have to separate the economics from the politics. John's point is exactly right in the politics. You know, the fact that some providers are overpaid, you know, Uwe Reinhardt, the famous healthcare economist, had his Reinhardt's law, which is that healthcare costs equal healthcare income. You know, the fact that some people, I'm saying they're overpaid, doesn't mean they're not going to fight like hell to stop those overpayments from being cut. So put the politics aside. But the economics, I think there's just no evidence that if we pay providers a little bit less from their high levels, that it would lead to a significant reduction in access in America.
Let's take an.
I think we have plenty of access.
I'd like to get another call in here, actually.
Sure.
Well, okay, John, go ahead.
Can I just quickly clarify? It's not paying them at Medicare plus 10% that will lead to queues. It's eliminating patient cost sharing. And the Urban Institute, on which Elizabeth Warren bases her numbers, actually projects a 14% increase in demand as a result of that. And
okay.
I think John would agree that no cost sharing will lead to more use.
Let's move to a call. We've got Olivia from Brighton. Olivia, what's on your mind?
Hi, yes. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling really to sort of clarify this confusion I'm having and a lot of listeners and news readers are probably having as to why this is being regarded as Warren's bill and not as Senator Sanders' bill when he is the one with a 1,000-page bill on the floor with his name on it. I'm just not sure. It seems almost like a way to discredit and undermine the hard work that Senator Sanders has been doing to create this bill and give all the credit to Warren.
Okay, thanks, Olivia. Yeah, let's turn to senior political reporter Anthony Brooks for that. Anthony, what do you say to that?
Well, no, it's a good question, and you hear this a lot out in the campaign trail from Sanders supporters. I mean, the truth is the way Elizabeth Warren sort of rode this horse, if you will, for a long time was simply to say, I'm with Bernie Sanders. I support his bill. And then questions began coming up, you know, how are you going to pay for it if you support the bill? Sanders' bill offers a bunch of different routes, essentially, to get to Medicare for All. But his bill doesn't specify exactly how this would be financed. And that's the step Warren took. So Warren has done work on this on Sanders' bill that Sanders didn't do at this point. And in a way, she's sort of taken this issue over and made it much more of her issue right now. But the caller's correct. Warren has always said, and she's been very clear, that this is Sanders' bill that she's supporting. Now she's come up with a plan how to pay for it.
All right, let's take one more call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Pamela from Concord, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I wish people would stop saying we love our health insurance. Our health insurance is not our health care. They're different things. Nobody loves their health insurance. They love their doctors and their hospitals and their medical providers. Medicare for All won't take away our choice. It'll give us more choice. I'm 100% for it.
Thanks for that. Pamela, let me turn to John and Jonathan on this. So Pamela's making the distinction between payment and providers and the care you receive versus how it's paid for. How should we think about those issues when it comes to Medicare for All?
Pamela's absolutely right in saying that, look, the truth is people care much more about their choice over the doctors and hospitals than over insurance. And that'll go up under and laid out as the Warren plan, as expensive as it is. Clearly, there'll be more choice of doctors and hospitals because they won't be in managed care networks that restrict your choice. So she's absolutely right. The problem is that's not how it's being. She's right that there's a perception problem. People perceive, oh, I'm going to lose my choice of insurance. Well, actually, she's right. If Elizabeth Warren could convince people, you know, that actually their choice of what they care about, which is doctors and hospitals, go up. Now, that's super expensive. That's part of why she has to raise so much money to pay for the plan. Private health insurance lowers costs by restricting your choice of doctors and hospitals. That's why they do it. And it's been shown that those restrictions lower costs without actually sacrificing the quality of care. But they do annoy patients. And the Sanders-Warren bill would get rid of those restrictions at a cost.
I should ask actually quickly to both of our guests, John and Jonathan, are either of you doing any advising of Warren or any of the other presidential campaigns on health care as the race progresses?
I've seen a couple of the plans, but I'm not advising anyone officially.
Okay. All right. That's helpful. And Jonathan Gruber, I wanted to ask you, there are a lot of large-scale assumptions being made in Warren's payment plan, you know, her plan for how Medicare for All gets financed. Are there any that seem particularly sound or particularly risky to you in your analysis?
I think that her payment plan is pretty sound. I mean, I think the big issue is the issue with her wealth tax, which there's a lot of controversy about how much money that'll raise. There's controversy about how much the original wealth tax will raise, and she doubles down on the wealth tax here. I think that's an assumption which has come under a lot of fire, and I think it's probably too rosy. The other place that's too rosy is she sort of assumes that the IRS is going out to get a lot of money we're owed. America has a large what's called tax gap. About 15% of what's owed in taxes isn't paid. She assumes that essentially we get as good at finding that money as some of the best other countries are. You know, I don't know how we're going to do that. In theory, we could. That money's there. But that would mean a large ramping up in the IRS, which I think raises political problems. So once again, as with both these plans, I think if your question is technically can they be done, sure. Politically, is it realistic? No.
Okay. I think Anthony's
really
got a question.
Sort of more of an ambitious, it's sort of more of an ambitious roadmap.
So, Jonathan and John, I have a question for both of you, because one of the things you hear out on the campaign trail, I was at a Pete Buttigieg rally last week, and he talks about Medicare for everyone who wants it as a kind of sensible step toward Medicare for all. He acknowledges that Medicare for all might well be where we want to get eventually, but a more realistic way to get there is to sort of stop first, I guess, at Medicare for all who want it. How do you folks respond to that as a kind of more moderate, gradual step toward Medicare for all?
I think that makes it's a very appealing concept. I think in the United States, you have to appeal and attract people into change rather than force them into it. I think the concept, the challenge with that concept is there's a lot of sort of technical issues with how you lure individuals into Medicare in a way that doesn't actually undermine Medicare. And so it has to be, you know, the devil, I'm afraid, is in the details, but the concept is very sound because I think Medicare has a huge advantage over private insurance, which is it pays much lower prices. And high prices are what make our health insurance so expensive in this country. You can attract people into Medicare if you figure out the right sort of way to do it.
So that makes me want to ask Jonathan Gruber a follow-up question. Any bill that gets proposed, any policy idea is going to go through a sausage-making process in Congress. And one of the things that I've wondered about is this one that has to be passed in total the way it is to work. Do we actually wind up in a worse situation if it sort of gets broken out into compromise bits and pieces and the whole thing isn't there? Or is this just a strong anchor with the knowledge that over time, likely something a little less complete is likely to be what's passed?
I mean, I think, you know, that's a great question. It relates to John's excellent answer on Medicare for All Who Want It, which is the Medicare for All plan that Sanders laid out is a big bang. There's not really a partial way to do it because really it's moving from a system of multiple payers to one payer. You can't going from, you know, 100 payers to 50 payers doesn't solve any of the problems she wants to solve. It really is big bang or nothing. And that big bang has proven politically impossible for 100-plus years. And my problem is not with the aspiration laid out in the bill. I think it's great. My problem is with the lack of explanation for how we are going to overcome the fundamental political barriers that have stopped this from happening for more than a century in our country. And that's why I totally agree with John that if you think of Medicare for All Who Want It as a first step, that makes a lot more sense, a lot more politically feasible.
Let's take one last call. Emmanuel from the South End, briefly, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I've been following the discussion, and I really think what he, what I think Jonathan said, of this being an ambitious roadmap is how we have to look at it. I mean, it's impossible in this current Congress to get anything passed. When you look at Obamacare passed with a moribund Senator Kennedy being rushed out of his sickbed to vote for this thing, I think what Elizabeth Warren is doing, she's offering a vision that people like me who are Generation X can see our children maybe having as good a life as we did, because we need a reorganization of our economy. It's really dire right now. And I think Elizabeth Warren, and to a certain extent Bernie Sanders, but Elizabeth Warren has a pragmatism that Bernie Sanders lacks,
all right,
is the only one out there who's offering a vision.
Great. Thank you, Emmanuel. So, Anthony, is that what you're hearing on the campaign trail in the primary? Are people hungry for vision?
I mean, I think they are. Look, I mean, healthcare is a huge issue, and Elizabeth Warren speaks about it in a very compelling way. Honestly, I haven't been back out on the campaign trail since she has released the plan, so it'll be interesting to see what people are saying and how she's explaining it. What's interesting is up until this point, a typical Elizabeth Warren rally didn't talk about healthcare. It talked about corruption. It talked about any number of plans that she was focused on, from free college and preschool and kindergarten and all that sort of stuff and erasing college debt, but she didn't talk about health care. Now she's going to be talking about it.
That's WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks. Anthony, thanks for being with us.
It's my pleasure.
Jonathan Gruber, a professor of economics at MIT and a key architect of Romney Care and the National Affordable Care Act. Thank you, Jonathan.
Great to be here.
And John Kingsdale, professor at Boston University School of Public Health and the founding executive director of the Commonwealth Health Insurance Connector Authority. John, thanks very much.
Thank you.
That's our show for today. Radio Boston is produced by Zoe Mitchell, Chris Siderick, Paris Alston, Jamie Bologna, and Walter Wuthman. Tim Skog is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Tisiana Deering. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.